For more than 1,000 years, the city of Bengaluru has been much loved for its weather. Then about 30 years ago, the city became famous for the super cool IT or computer industry related jobs. Then about 20 years ago, the city got a lot of attention, but this time for the incredibly long traffic jams. Over the last decade, Bengaluru has become notorious for facing an acute water scarcity. What is happening in Bengaluru? Why is drinking water so scarce? This episode is a story recounting the history of Bengaluru. Sometimes I might use the word Bangalore to refer to the city because that's how I've heard my mother refer to the city. She has very fond memories of the city when it used to be called Bangalore. Those were the times when the city had these long tree-lined avenues and the weather was absolutely gorgeous. So I might use the words Bengaluru and Bangalore interchangeably. Bear with me. This episode will talk about the stories about how the city was formed, the various dynasties that have ruled the city, the various events that transpired over the centuries, and how these have affected the water availability. I'll narrate this story in 3 parts, and here comes part 1. More than 1,000 years ago, Bengaluru was a very small settlement. It was a little bigger than a village. A few odd tribes lived here and there. It was an arid and a dry region. The locals there tried to convert some parts of this dry region that was otherwise just filled with thorny bushes into fertile pastures. Now, how did they do this? If you think about any large settlement or civilization in the world, you would have always found them on the banks of flowing rivers. Whether it is the Egyptians who grew large settlements on the banks of Nile, or we know about the Mesopotamian civilization that flourished on the banks of Tigris and Euphrates. Bengaluru had none of those advantages because there was no flowing river anywhere in the neighborhood. But the locals then came up with an ingenious system. They took advantage of 2 things. One was the slopy terrain, and the second was the rainfall that that region received. It may not have been throughout the year, but it was reasonably regular. So what the locals did was to build a series of lakes, and they connected these lakes with one another. So if you had to envisage this, think of a hill and think of a group of villagers who build a series of small tanks or mud embankments that they build around the area where water collects. So they first build one on the top of the hill, the next tank a little below that, another lake or a tank a little further below, and it keeps going on till they reach the plains. So whenever it rained, the lakes would fill up, and when the lakes overflowed, they would flow on to the next lake. And this way, there was water all around the year for the people who lived there, so they could use this water primarily for agriculture.
Wow!
And also, this helped them in one other very important way. Now, before they built all of these lakes, the rainwater would just flow right down the slope, and it would join 2 tributaries or rivers that flowed a little bit of a distance away from Bengaluru, and it would all just flow into the ocean. But now, because they built a series of lakes and tanks, the rainwater collected in these lakes and tanks, the water also started seeping into the ground. And it started replenishing the aquifers. Aquifers are natural places that you find under the soil where water collects. And thus, a small settlement kept flourishing around Bengaluru. We are talking about 1000 AD till about 1500 AD. So this is about 1000 years ago till about 500 years ago. This brings us to part 2 of our story. Now, around 1500 AD, there was a young man called Kempe Gowda. He joined the armies of the Vijayanagara Empire. He served the king Achyutaraya. I don't know if y'all have heard of the king Krishnadevaraya. Even if you've not heard of him, you might very likely have heard of Tenali Raman. His tales are very funny and also quite famous to this day. So Achyutaraya was the brother of Krishnadevaraya, and he was the king who succeeded Krishnadevaraya after his death. Now Kempe Gowda, the hero of our story, was a fearless young man. He was also a very just and a very kind chieftain. He had served the king quite well, and he had helped the king win a few battles. And he told the king that he had a vision of creating a grand city, a city where people of many trades, many tribes, many religions would all live alongside happily. Now, at that time, the capital of the Vijayanagara Empire was Hampi, which was quite some distance away from Bengaluru. Hampi was then the richest city in all of India. And I don't know if you all know this, it was also the second richest in the entire world. People from all across the world came there to trade in spices, silks, horses, and a lot many more things. Kempe Gowda wanted to build a city somewhat similar, but I don't think he thought of something as grand as Hampi, but somewhat similar in spirit and temperament, because he really wanted trade to flourish. Now, King Achyutaraya was quite pleased with Kempe Gowda, and he gifted him lands and money. So now Kempe Gowda set out to find a spot where he wanted to build the grand city he had in mind. Now, there are many stories about how he came about to choose the area where Bengaluru stands today. Now, one of the stories that I've read is this, that Kempe Gowda went hunting with his friends and he saw a hare chase away a hunting dog. Now, usually hunting dogs chase hares. But here, he saw a brave hare chase away his hunting dog. The legend goes that he felt that this land must be a place for many heroics and heroes to live in, and that's why he chose that spot, which today we call as Bengaluru. Then there's another story which simply indicates that he and his friends went off on a long ride and they chanced upon this place and they found the area very peaceful and they loved the weather. And that's why he chose that spot to build his grand city of Bengaluru. I don't know which of these stories is true. It's possible that both are, or it's possible neither is. But whichever it was, that is a spot where the city of Bengaluru stands today. Kempe Gowda was not just a brave and a kind and a just chieftain. He was also a very sensible man. So he knew that if a large settlement had to be established in a place like this, people needed enough food to eat and water to drink. So his mother is said to have told him that if you really wanted to build your grand idea of a city here, she made this statement in Kannada, which goes as Keregalam Kattu and Marangalam Nidu, which means build lots of lakes and plant lots of trees. Now remember, before Kempe Gowda came, there was already a lot many series of lakes. So what Kempe Gowda really did was he doubled down on all of those efforts and he added many, many more lakes, many, many more series of lakes to Bengaluru. It is said that there were more than 1,000 lakes and over 20,000 water bodies, which includes open wells from which people can drink water. So that was the Bengaluru that Kempe Gowda built. There's a lot more to the story. He built some fabulous forts. He built towers and embankments and all of that. But it's besides the point, because this episode is really about the drinking water scarcity. So I'm just going to stick to that. It was all hunky-dory. After more than 100 years, the Vijayanagara Empire fell. The Sultan of Bijapur conquered it. The city changed hands. In fact, the city changed hands many, many times. The Marathas came and ruled there for a while. The Mysore Maharajas ruled there for a while. Some of the Deccan Sultanates also ruled for a while. Throughout all of these changes in the regime, no one thought of touching the thousand and odd lakes and the water bodies, they continued to be the primary source of water. These water bodies stayed more or less intact up until the British really took over the city. Which brings us to part 3. Now, in the late 1800s, the British loved the city, they loved the weather, and they decided to stay on. Now, they thought to themselves that, look, we know we're going to bring a lot of our army soldiers here. In fact, a great many number of the British soldiers chose to come to Bengaluru to recuperate. The weather was fabulous, and there were plenty of amenities also over there. The British had invested in the railways and the roadways and all of that. However, they were not very thrilled with the idea of relying entirely on the lakes and these open wells for their water. They thought to themselves that let's just build some pipes to carry water from the river Kaveri. Now, Kaveri is quite some distance away, so they just decided that they would lay these huge pipelines all the way from Kaveri to Bengaluru, and they would reduce their reliance on all these series and sequences of lakes and open wells, which they felt was behind times. Why bother with maintaining tanks and lakes? The British left, India became independent, but unfortunately, independent India followed the same policies that the Britishers had followed, which was to rely on water from the Kaveri and not bother maintaining those tanks and lakes. Many of these tanks and lakes were razed to the ground. One of the most prominent lake is the Dharmabuddhi Lake, which was cemented right after the Indian independence, and the Congress held many of its fairs and exhibitions for people. It used to be also the place where a lot of circuses used to be held. And eventually someone built a very big bus stand there, which we today know as the Majestic Bus Stand, because this, it also used to be the place where the Majestic Circus used to hold their performances. I think today it's called the Kempegowda Bus Stand. It's right there in the middle of the city. It was one of the most prominent lakes that was one of the first to lose its character and give way to tall buildings. Now, if you visited Bengaluru today, you'll see a lot of tall buildings that have come up all over the place. So there were two things that happened because of all these tall buildings. One was there was no place for the groundwater to seep into when it rained. So even if you've got a borewell and if you try to pump water, there was nothing left in the aquifer beneath the ground because there was no place for the water to get collected. And the second thing that happened was that whenever it rained, the water used to flow right down the slopes into the valley below. Now, because of all these haphazard building structures in several places, the water had no place to flow out. And that has caused a lot of flooding. So look at the irony. The city has no place to collect the water. The city has no place to let the water flow down into the valley either. So both ways, Bengaluru has lost its ability to utilize this rainwater that Kempegowda had built years ago. So Bengaluru's water crisis is not a story about climate change. It is a story of people neglecting some of the basic rules of how communities get food to eat and water to drink. So from over 1,400 lakes in the 1800s before the British took over, today we just have 33 living lakes in the city. However, not all is lost. There are a lot of people who are working very actively to restore these lakes. One such person that I would love to give a shout out to is Anand Malligavad. He is also called the Lake Man of India. He is a leading conservationist and environmentalist from Bengaluru. He is working very, very actively in restoring more and more lakes. He wasn't a man who was trained in environmental science. Anand uses a lot of traditional methods to revive all of these lakes, and he's had quite a bit of success. So let me leave this story off on a very positive note. There is a lot that you and I can do wherever we live. At the barest minimum, planting trees is always a wonderful way to give back to nature. If you live in Bengaluru and if you'd like to contribute, you can reach out to someone like Anand Malligavat. I'm leaving a link to how you can reach out to Anand Malligavat. On that note, here's some information to all of our listeners on how we go about producing each one of our episodes. So the first step is always we brainstorm and come up with a list of topics that we think are positive, meaningful, and engaging to young children and for whole families to sit down together and listen to. And the next step is, of course, the recording process. And then we edit them in the back end and we insert all the fun sound effects that kids love so much. Each one of these take time, effort, and money. So if you've enjoyed listening to our episodes and would like to support Team What's New Today, you can support us by donating any sum of your choice. The link to supporting us is in the show notes below. We'll be back soon with our next episode. Until then, it's goodbye from me, Sangeeta,